cancer diagnosis at the age of 32, my mom and I talked a lot about the shock of that diagnosis, given several doctors told us you're too young to have endometrial cancer. After much discussion, we began to feel driven to inform and help educate other young women about what symptoms they should be concerned.
Having both been teachers, it seemed natural for us to look for a way to share Alex's cancer journey in order to help other young women avoid such a shocking diagnosis or possibly navigate a similar path. A podcast seemed the best way to get the word out, and that's how Down There Aware was born.
4 years later, our mother-daughter duo has gone from educating and informing to advocacy and action, with a fresh and sometimes very interesting and somewhat humorous multi-generational perspective.
We look forward to sharing with you season 4 as we advocate, take action, and make it a priority to always be
Down There Aware.
Welcome back to another episode of Down There Aware. We are probably going to have a little bit of a lively discussion today.
Lively?
But, you know, I follow a lot of cancer blogs and Instagram accounts and things like that. And some of them are funny, like Snarky Cancer and ones that I... Thanks, cancer, things like that. But this popped up on my page the other day, and it's from the account The Cancer Patient, and they have 100,000 followers. And it was a screenshot of what looks like a DM to their account. And it says, "How can you talk about your cancer when all you get back is sympathy?" And the, what's that called? Description. No, that's not it. Caption says, is sympathy fatigue a thing? The pity looks, the sad head tilt, and people crying when you're in their sight. Anyone else feel the same way? And there are over 100 comments that a lot of people who have cancer or who have had cancer are saying very similar things. So I thought that we could discuss a little bit and see from someone who has had cancer and what the cancer world calls a cancer muggle.
Is that what I am?
You're a muggle because you, like, you're not a wizard, Harry. Yeah. So a cancer muggle, someone who's never had cancer, on different perspectives, because I think it's important to have these conversations. I think... the feelings you have when you're diagnosed with cancer are valid no matter what they are, because you never know how you're going to respond when that happens. But I also think cancer patients and people who have had cancer can do a better job maybe of communicating with people who genuinely care about them and are trying to show support.
Yeah, when you first told me about sympathy fatigue and explained it to me, I really just didn't understand it. And I probably still don't. but again, I think one of the first things I said to you was, I don't have cancer. Mm-hmm. I haven't had cancer. So I can understand that that's a real thing. I just don't feel it. I don't understand it. I can admit that you or whoever this person is, you know, think it's a real thing. But again, I do think communication is what's important. I, of course, because anything I ever say to you, you always say, Google it. And so I Googled it and I couldn't find anything about it. All I could find was compassion fatigue, which is not the same thing.
Right.
It's really more of a healthcare or caregivers who run out of compassion because they are so depleted in caring for someone else. So it's a totally different thing.
Yeah. Well, and I would like to think that I can think critically and receive feedback that, you know, opposes necessarily what my first instinct is. But some of the comments are things like, I despise the phrases, I'm sorry, and if there's anything I can do. There isn't anything you can do, and it's no one's fault, so there's no need to apologize. I hear these phrases all day, every day.
And I can appreciate that perspective. However,
you knew there was a however.
You knew that was coming. First of all, I say I'm sorry. I saw a thing on the Today Show talking about, I think it was on Hoda and Jenna, about how women in particular just apologize too much. We run into our couch and we say, I'm sorry. And there was some research that was done that validated that. I say I'm sorry to someone sometimes because I'm sorry they're going through something. I'm not sorry because I caused it or I'm the reason for it or I'm responsible. I'm just sorry. And maybe that's a different, maybe that's a wrong way to say it. Maybe that's not accurate enough to just, maybe it's better to say, I wish you weren't going through all this. I don't know. But I think we, as a society, have kind of diminished the words I'm sorry to not really express what all those words can express. In German, it's es tut mir leid. It does me sorrow.
Well, and so I think that's a good transition because it does me sorrow. Saying I'm sorry puts it back on you. So it's expressing that I feel something, like what you're going through has made me feel so bad.
Yes.
Right. But if you think about that from a cancer patient's perspective, I feel bad.
Makes me feel bad for you.
True. But I think overwhelmingly, our society doesn't think like you. And
and that's probably good.
but I mean that in not a great way, but I think a lot of people are more selfish than that in terms of... they feel sorry and they feel pity because it, for some reason, it makes them feel better. It makes them feel like they're doing something when it's oftentimes empty and hollow and it's not genuine. Now, I am generally, and I think this post is generally speaking about not close friends, not family, like the general, you know, like they find out you have cancer. Oh, I'm so sorry. That must be so hard. And some of the comments talk about things that they would rather happen. And a lot of people say, I get them to stop talking because I like joke morbidly about my cancer. And it makes them uncomfortable. Yeah. And they can't handle it. And, you know, I have found that too. And I wasn't anywhere near a terminal diagnosis. But I have joked about my fertility. I've joked about all kinds of things surrounding my cancer diagnosis and subsequent surgery. And it makes people uncomfortable. And it's like, well, it was my diagnosis. Surely if I'm joking about it, like you can laugh and
be fine.
Well,
and I think that's the point. You need to take your cue from the cancer patient.
Yeah. And I think the patient needs to do a better job of expressing what they need.
And yes.
And what they want. And because I remember very clearly, it was pretty much like right after my diagnosis, I feel like we were watching something. And there was, we had already started watching Call the Midwife before my diagnosis. And after my diagnosis, I remember we were looking for something to watch and you said, what about Call the Midwife? And followed it up with, unless you're not ready for that, because obviously there are births and pregnancies and whatever during the whole thing. But just for you, now you're my mother, so you're pretty in tune to that. But for you to take the time and thought to say, maybe that's not where your mind's at. You know, maybe you can't do this right now. And that's a very specific example,
but I think that's a good example. Had I not thought to say that, it might have been good, if that was bothersome to you, for you to say, I'm not ready to watch that yet.
Yeah. And that's hard to say. I think that's hard to admit that something affects you that much, you know, in that way. But
it shouldn't be. I mean, I think.
Right. It shouldn't be.
Yeah. In all we've been trying to do, we want to help empower patients to speak up and be advocates for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Some of the comments are things like the head tilt. Oh, you know, and it is that kind of like empty pity. A lot of it is dark humor gets them good every time. I make stupid sarcastic jokes. Same goes for grief. I feel this a lot. One of my doctors does this. I loathe it. But then others, I love the sympathy. Never got it from where I wanted it, so I was desperate for it where I got it.
Oh, see?
I will give it big time whenever the opportunity arises. Mm. And then someone said it's the same 18 years later, talking about, you know, their past diagnosis. So I think it's a mixed bag, and it's very personal. But I also feel like you have to be outspoken about what you want and what you need,
what you're comfortable with,
and be honest that that's going to ebb and flow. It's going to change.
And the other people you're with don't know how it has ebbed and flowed.
Right.
Unless you speak up.
Right. And I think people who are closest to you will err on the side of caution.
Yes.
Because they know you. And like, I will never forget after my diagnosis, my best friend got pregnant during the pandemic and with her second child, and I babysat her first child. And they brought her over one day, and she had a I'm going to be a big sister shirt on. That's how they were going to tell me. And her husband, my best friend's husband, said something along the lines of, we weren't sure. And I was like, I want to celebrate you. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, like, sure, it makes me sad, not about you or whatever. And it was only because it was like a quick, like it was, I don't know, she was born December. So it was probably like less than a year after my diagnosis. Right. So it was pretty like new and fresh. But just the fact that they thought about it.
They thought about it.
And they really thought it through. And they thought of like a cute, fun way. And, you know, and it was, I think because they thought about it, it wasn't a flippant thing that it was just like, oh, yeah, we're having another kid. But they really put some thought into it, that it meant more, you know, than if they hadn't.
And again, it all boils down to communication.
It does. And, you know, I was very open and said, thank you, you know, for taking the time and consideration to consider me and consider my feelings. But yeah, I want to celebrate you. That's awesome. I get another niece, you know, at the time we didn't know, but it was another niece. So yeah, I think, I don't know. I think it's an interesting conversation.
I do too.
And you know, it's,
I think for me, what made me uncomfortable is calling it sympathy fatigue, as though you're just tired of sympathy. And I think a lot of times people don't know how to react. And we've talked about that some on the podcast. They don't know how to react, especially if they haven't had cancer and if they haven't had anybody close to them who has had cancer. Mm-hmm. They really just don't know what to say.
Well, and some people, I mean, me, for example, my first experience with cancer was my grandmother getting leukemia, and she died very quickly after she was diagnosed. She was older. She, you know, like I said, died very quickly, and her diagnosis was pretty much terminal. It, you know, they kept her alive with medicine and blood transfusions and things, but that was just keeping her alive. It's just kind of extending it. And so my experience with cancer until something else happened with another friend who got another terminal diagnosis, it was always the worst case.
Well, in cancer, the big C is right. looked at as that.
And you know, now having my own experience where it's very likely I will not have a recurrence of cancer. And it's very likely that I will go on and live a long life. And it's, you know, it wasn't that terminal diagnosis. I have friends who have skin cut off, moles and things, and they're fine. They had cancer and it got removed and it was treatable and it was fine. And so I think more and more as research increases and treatments increase, cancer is becoming less of the big scary C. Mm-hmm. But still in our minds from our first cancer experience, it's that dreaded you have cancer. And like, again, talking about Call the Midwife, they've had a couple instances of cancer on the show and it's a horrific diagnosis to realize that they have this disease and there's nothing they can do about it.
Well, because
that was back in the 50s and 60s.
Right. Back in the 50s and 60s, we didn't have the information we have right now. And I know even a few years ago, my blood work came back. I can't even remember now a lot of specifics, but it came back some deal with my iron, and my endocrinologist seemed very concerned and said, you need to go to a hematologist, and sent me to a hematologist who happens to be located at the cancer center. Mm. And so that, of course, raised some red flags to me. And then when I sat down with him and he explained what was going on and what it could be, you know, it was that big C thing. And it's like, why does that scare us so much? But because there's so much we don't know about it, we can't do about it.
Yeah.
And you're right. Yours was a case of there was a treatment. Now, to say that doesn't minimize it, because the treatment costs you your fertility.
Right.
But generally speaking, we just were afraid of cancer, and I guess rightly so, because it's pretty scary.
Yeah, it is. But to end on a lighter note, you know, so many great things are being done in research, vaccines. Last week we talked about, no, 2 weeks ago, we talked about a vaccine for
Lynch syndrome associated cancer.
It causes so many cancers. And so technology is just going leaps and bounds. And I think that we're in the best place we have been. I mean, and even a few weeks back, we talked about Hank Green's diagnosis with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I've been keeping up with his videos. And he says, yeah, you know, the chemo sucks and it's really difficult. However, I have a great prognosis, you know, and the drugs are known to work.
Well, and talk about growth mindset that we talked about last week. He, you know, he is a scientist and he's looking at it from what he can learn and how it can help him.
Yeah.
That's a great growth mindset.
It really is. So, you know, keeping a good perspective, but also, and it all comes down to being your own advocate.
Yes.
Because if you can advocate for yourself and your needs and your feelings, whether that's with your doctor, with your family, with your friends, with strangers, you know, if you are very visibly sick, right? Like, I have a friend from college who just celebrated her 1 year anniversary of bone marrow transplant and being cancer free. She had a really bad version of leukemia. I can't remember what it's called now. Anyway, but she for a long time was very visibly sick. She had lost all her hair and she was weak and, you know, just really looked ill. So you could have that kind of treatment in cancer, or you could be like me where, yeah, I had surgery and then I was pretty well recovered pretty quickly and didn't, you know, physically didn't have a lot of complications or anything. I don't know where I was going with that, but But to advocate for yourself with strangers, right? So in that, if people, you know, express things or if they try to say anything, you can just very confidently but politely, you know, say, I'm good, thank you.
Well, and I do think the way one responds to other sympathy is important, because the sympathy, just by virtue of the definition, is a positive feeling toward you. And maybe you are fatigued by all that's been coming your way. Mm-hmm. But simply saying, you know, I really don't want to talk about it. I'm kind of weary of discussing it. Let's talk about such and such. Yep. I appreciate you being here. Let's talk about such and such.
Yeah.
And just help guide that relationship in that conversation. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I heard recently Elizabeth Olsen interviewed, and she attributed it to her father and her older sisters that no is a complete sentence.
Mm.
And so, you know, if someone is stretching a boundary, you can very politely, but, and you don't have to expound on it, but just no, thank you, I'm moving on, you know. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to go into why or why that makes you feel that way or whatever, but you can deal with your feelings without making other people, you know, upset or uncomfortable. You can take care of yourself and be your own advocate.
Yeah, you don't owe an explanation.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. Because, I mean, your feelings are going to ebb and flow constantly. So
I'm kind of like that when I go in a store and the salesperson is on my back. I just say, no, thanks. Just looking. And I go the other way.
Right. Exactly. So, well, thanks for listening today. And we will see you next week with a new episode. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Down There Aware. Be sure to like and subscribe on our new YouTube channel, as well as on your favorite podcast platform. You can find us at Down There Aware on all social media sites, Twitter, Pinterest, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. If you have it, we're there at Down There Aware. You can learn more on our website, www.downthereaware.com, and always get in touch with us, downthereaware@gmail.com. See you next week.